Good evening. Certainly glad to be back here and enjoy the song service and the prayer. And I hope that you're ready to take another little trip, because we've got another little bit to go.
This little bit right here. We're gradually sliding down towards the time of Christ.
We've got maybe 120 or so years to talk about tonight. We've talked about the conception of God's people, the birth of God's people, lessons from the judges, and Brad mentioned that we're going to talk about a different kind of leadership tonight. We're going to talk about the time of the kings, the one time when there was a united kingdom. I don't know if you can call it a kingdom if you don't have a king. So we're going to have a king for three different reigns, a united kingdom. The first three kings, sometimes called the kingdom, sometimes it's called the United Kingdom if you're reading in your history books. It's the same period of time. About 120 plus years. Sort of hard to get a handle on this amount of time. We're going to talk about Saul, David, and Solomon. And the Chronicles tells us that David reigned for 40 years and Solomon reigned for 40 years. Acts tells us that Solomon reigned for 40 years. But we're going to back up and throw Samuel in there with Saul, and that's going to be a few years before, and we don't know exactly how many. But 120 plus years, you kind of get the idea of what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about things out of the books of Samuel, Kings, Chronicles, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. Now, if you will, get your Bible, pick up a Bible, and just turn to the index. Because we're going to digress tonight from something that we have been doing so far the first three nights. And the reason we're going to digress is so far we've been following straight history, chronological order. The books were laid out that way. Genesis, Leviticus, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, and Judges. You're looking at your index in the Old Testament. Now we're going to skip Ruth because of time, but the beautiful story in Ruth that we're going to pick up with Samuel's, 1st and 2nd Samuel, 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles. This is where we're going to jump around a little bit. And this is important for you to understand why we're doing this, because we had two goals this week. First one was to give you the story quick enough that you could put all these pieces together in the order in which they happened. That way you can go back and read it and it'll mean more to you. The second thing was to show you how, especially, the second half of the Old Testament fits in, because if you don't know where some of these books fit, they'll drive you crazy. Lord willing, Friday night, we're going to talk about the prophet Ezekiel. And I promise you that if you don't know anything about what Ezekiel did, why he wrote, who he was writing to, what the time period was, you'll think the man's crazy. It would make no sense what he's doing. But if you put him in the right place, talking to the right people, at the right time, you know exactly what he's trying to do. So let me ask you. You look down this list of Old Testament people and the Old Testament chapters, how much time do you spend studying the second half of the Old Testament? Now, you hear all kinds of stories out of the first half of the Old Testament. But how much time do you spend studying the second half, major and minor prophets? There's some beautiful things there. There's some things that add to the story and complement the story and bring us right up to the time of Christ. It's too good to miss. This is what we're trying to bring to you tonight. So we're going to jump over Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther just because they're going to come in Friday night. And we're going to jump over them and pick up Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Solomon. So, with that little bit of introduction, let's jump right on into our story as we did a couple of nights ago. Here's the story. And there's so many details that we could not put in here. And I was reviewing this thing this afternoon, and I ran across this story that I wanted to put in here so bad, but I knew that if I didn't spend about 5 minutes on this one story, it would be useless, and so I didn't put it in. But I want to tell you, there's stories and stories and details that's rich that we just don't have time to cover because we want to give you the big picture. So here we go. Samuel. Samuel, even before he was born, was promised by his mother Hannah to be given to the ministry of the temple. Eli was the high priest at that time. And Hannah had been barren, and she wanted the child so bad. It was one of these deals like, Lord, if you give me what I want, I'll give you half of everything I own. She said, if you let me have a son, let me wean him, I'll give him to you. And so Samuel grew up under a Nazarite vow, which means no haircutting. So you can imagine he looked pretty rough. But that was the nature of the Nazarite vow. So Samuel was given to Eli the priest even before he was born. Now, as Samuel went into the ministry and was helping Eli, now keep in mind, Samuel was not of the tribe of Levi. He couldn't be a priest, but he could be a prophet. But he's there to serve. He's there to minister. The Lord called him in the night with a call directly to him, called his name, and Samuel realized then that the Lord was going to speak to him and through him. And before long, the wisdom of Samuel revealed to the people around that this was actually going to be the next prophet. Now, if you remember what Brad talked about last night at the book of Judges, Samuel was, you might say, one of the last judges. He actually judged Israel. Not in the sense that Solomon did and Gideon that led an army and killed a whole bunch of people. But he was a judge that had a route. Every year he would leave his hometown of Ramah and go on a circuit to different places judging Israel, doing what was right, giving out the word of the Lord. Samuel's sons were judges, but they did not walk in his ways. When Samuel got old, he appointed his sons as judges. But the people didn't like Samuel's sons. Well, they loved Samuel, but they didn't like his sons. And so they complained, and this is what they wanted. The people asked for a king, and so the Lord decided to give them one. A man named Saul. Samuel anointed Saul as king, and was his, you might say he was his advisor, because Saul needed guidance on how to be a good king. Now you'll see how all this stuff fits into the story here very quickly. Samuel told Saul to go to Gilgal, and to tarry there for 7 days, but this was on in the future. Samuel told him, in the future, you're going to be at Gilgal. You tarry 7 days, I'll come and meet you, and I'll offer burnt sacrifices and peace offerings. But you wait on me. Well, the time came, and when Saul went to Gilgal, it was because there was an army of Philistines had come up against Israel, and they were better prepared than Israel was, and Israel's army was scared. And they were waiting around for something to happen, and Saul is there, their king is there for 7 days, and nothing's happening, and the army begins to separate. So I'm going to go home. So I'm going to go to another land. They're afraid. Sort of like when Brad gave us a story last night about Gideon. The Lord pared down Gideon's army by simply asking, who's afraid to fight? Those of you that are afraid to fight, go home. Well, the same thing's happening to Saul, except Saul is cut out of a different piece of cloth than Gideon. Saul gets excited, and he thinks Samuel's not coming. So he decides that he is going to offer the sacrifices himself. So Saul offered the sacrifices before the battle instead of waiting on Samuel, and the Lord was displeased. Okay, why? Well, the easy answer is that Saul was not a Levite. Saul was not a priest, so it was wrong for him to offer those things. He took more on him than he should have. Well, that would have been partly true, but Samuel wasn't either. But Samuel was going to come make the offerings. Now, we know a prophet can make an offering because Brad's going to tell us, Lord willing, tomorrow night, something about the prophet Elijah. He made a huge offering. Classic story that he's going to relate to us tomorrow night. So we know that we've got evidence that prophets could offer sacrifices. So was it because Saul was of the wrong tribe? Or could it be something more important? Could it be that the Lord was displeased because Saul simply didn't trust Saul didn't wait. Saul saw his army going away, and he needed to do something to pull his army back to him, because he needed all these people. But you see, Gideon had already proved that if you got the Lord on your side, you don't need to outnumber the enemy. So could it be that Saul's sin was not that he was of the wrong tribe, but he didn't trust. He didn't have complete faith. And so he took it on himself to alter a situation that God said, I'm in control of. There was another situation just a little while after that in which the Lord told Saul to go and destroy all the people of the Amalekites because of what they had done to Israel in the past. The Lord said, go kill them all. You kill the king, you kill the people, you kill everybody and everything and all the cattle. You wipe them off the face of the earth. This was a test. Saul went to the battle, conquered the Amalekites, killed a bunch of them, but he saved the king and the best of the animals to offer sacrifice. Now, the Lord was really displeased. See there? Right up here, he was just kind of displeased. But when Samuel came to him, we're going to see in just a minute, you're going to find out that the Lord was really displeased in what Saul did this time. Now, Samuel anointed David as the next king. Along about here, the situation with Saul had got so bad that the Lord sent Samuel to go and anoint the next king. Wasn't going to set him up as a king yet. Now, this is an important part to the story of David. David was anointed king years before he got to be king. But Samuel went to him and poured the oil of anointing on his head. So David knew what was ahead for him for a long time before he actually got to be king. David defeated Goliath, the giant of the Philistines. And this is a story I love. David, I'm going to tell you this much about the story. You remember the part about David's speech when he was trying to convince Saul that even though I'm just a youth, as Saul said, you're just a youth. You can't go and fight this giant. And David said, I fought the lion, I fought the bear, the Lord was with me against them, and the Lord will be with me against this uncircumcised Philistine that dares to defy the army of God. Is that not powerful? And then Saul wanted to put his armor on David, and David, of course, couldn't wear it because he was so much smaller than Saul, which leads to the expression, you may have heard this, that not everyone can wear the king's armor. David couldn't wear the king's armor. But he had his own way of fighting. He had his own defense and he had his own offense. He didn't need the king's armor for defense and he didn't need the king's sword for offense. The Lord prepared him. 5 smooth stones. And if you ever think you've got to have an army behind you, you always remember David. He stopped and picked up his ammunition on the way to the battle. If that's not believing in the Lord's providence, I don't know what is. Saul envied David because when all this fighting was over with, the people liked David's adventure and all he did. And they sang a song, and the song went something like this. Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his 10,000. And so Saul became jealous. And he tried to kill David. And 2 different times, David had a chance to kill Saul, but he doesn't. And both times, he made a statement sort of like this. He said, we cannot harm the Lord's anointed. Because David had right-hand men, so to speak. And when they caught Saul in a vulnerable situation, they wanted to kill him. Even though David didn't want to kill him, they said, we've got the king. Let's kill the king. And both times, 2 times, David said, we can't hurt the Lord's anointed. Now that's important. Because how many of us speak things against people that we shouldn't say. Think things against people we shouldn't say. And here's David that's got a man that's trying to kill him in his grasp, and he lets him go. Doesn't even want to hurt him, saying, this is the Lord's anointed. I cannot harm him. That's the kind of person that David was. Samuel died. Now what's important about Samuel dying is the timing. Because a few years later, could be 2 years, could be 4 years, but at some time later, the Philistines come up to fight against Israel again, and Saul wants to know what the Lord wants him to do. So David, Samuel had been with him in the past, and he told him what to do, but Samuel's dead now. That's the important point about that previous slide. Samuel's gone out of the picture. This is where Saul commits his third great sin against the Lord. Saul wants to know what's going to happen in the future so bad that he seeks out, as the scriptures call it, a woman with a familiar spirit. Now, a familiar spirit was like a psychic, a fortune teller. They were supposed to have been destroyed out of the land, but they hadn't destroyed them out of the land, and so now King Saul not only has it destroyed them, but he goes to hunt one. So he goes to one that's called the Witch of Endor. You may have heard that expression. The woman of a place called Endor. And she brings up Samuel. Now, a lot of people want to kind of raise the eyebrow right here and say, did she really raise up Samuel? Did she really have power to do this? Back in those days, could a woman with a familiar spirit really do it? Bible says she did. Well, we're going to read something in a little bit that talks about when the woman brought up the spirit, she was frightened. It scared her that she actually saw somebody. So I suspect the whole thing had been a fake, all that she had done in the past. But for this one time, the Lord wanted Saul to know that Samuel knew what was going on. And so he allowed Samuel's presence to come up in this encounter. But at this point, what we're going to talk about is she brought up Samuel, and the Lord was really, really displeased. Really, really displeased this time. So much so that he said, Saul, you and your son's going to die tomorrow. And they did. And David became king. Now, this is an interesting thing. You've heard this over and over, probably about Uzzah, but you know when Uzzah happened. Uzzah happened when David was trying to get the ark to Jerusalem. The ark had been at a place called Kirjath. I forget the whole name, but it's one of these two-word Bible names. But the ark had been there in the house of Abinadab for several years. David wanted to bring it into Jerusalem so they could have the regular worship there. And this is when this happened. David was bringing the ark to Jerusalem. On the way, the cart faltered. The ark was on it. Uzzah put out his hand, trying to steady it, and he died. Because years and years before, God had said, no one but the Levites can touch the ark. And even though the Lord didn't say that every day, he said it once, and that was enough. Now, here's another one of these take-home lessons. You know, the Lord's not going to beat you over the head with the scriptures every day. He expects you to read what it says, get that firmly in your mind, and live your life according to it. You know, if the Lord was in the business of repeating himself, the Bible would be rewritten about every year. We'd have about 2,000 versions of it since the time of Christ. But he wrote it in one time. He said the commandments one time. And Uzzah died because he didn't believe that. David committed adultery with Bathsheba. You know the details of this situation, and so much can be said about why she was even up there bathing in sight of someone else, why she allowed this to happen, why David even thought it. But he committed adultery with someone who was not his wife, married to another person, and then on top of all that, he finagled to have her husband slain, and scriptures say with the sword of Ammon. It was in the battle, but it was a staged situation. It was a circumstantial situation to make sure that Uriah was killed. Sometimes people today get into situations and blame it on this and blame it all that. Well, the Lord knew exactly what David was doing. David wasn't the one that pulled the trigger, so to speak, but the Lord knew that David is the one that set everything up. So don't any of us think that we're going to finagle a situation and then lay it on as an excuse on somebody else. We can lay it on our best friend. We can lay it on our girlfriend, our boyfriend. We can lay it on all kinds of things. It won't matter. The Lord knows each one of us has the ability to decide right and wrong. The Lord sent Nathan, the prophet, at that time after Samuel, to convict David, and he did a good job. He told the story of a man with only one little ewe lamb. You remember that story? Only one little ewe lamb, and it incensed David. He was ready to go get this man that had killed this one ewe lamb. And Nathan said, David, you're the man. You're the man, and Bathsheba is a little ewe lamb. David knew exactly what Nathan was talking about. He repented, but his son died. And then we have the story later on in David's life. This is part of the trouble that came to David. Part of the trouble. Amnon, one of David's children, wanted to lay with his half-sister Tamar, and he did. Tamar's brother, Absalom, found out about it and waited a while, but he eventually took revenge and killed Amnon, and then Absalom went into exile. And this caused David great grief because he lost Amnon. Tamar was deflowered and ruined. Tamar was ruined, and Absalom was in exile. So this brought him a lot of trouble. Did you ever wonder if David ever thought, well, you know, my boys have got into something that got me in trouble? I was on that rooftop and I saw Bathsheba, and I didn't control myself, and my boys just followed in my footsteps. So be careful what you do. And if you do something and you've repented of it, please never breathe a word of it around your children so that they know the kind of person you used to be. You know this old song that's on the radio right now, this little country song, we found out about Mama before she was Mama. And when Mama found out, she didn't like it, we found out. Don't let your kids know what you used to be if you've repented of it. Absalom conspires against David. It gets even worse. Absalom wants to dethrone David. He conspires against him. And there's a big fight, a rebellion going along for a long time. Finally, they get the best of Absalom. He tries to flee. He gets his head hung in an oak tree. And David's right-hand man goes to him and thrusts three darts into him. Kills him. So Absalom's gone. And then David did a strange thing, which at other times people were commanded to do. We read two nights ago about how when the children came out of Egypt, they were numbered. 604,000, 603,500. And then at the end of that time, they were numbered again. Well, God wanted them to know how many people there were. But now David decides to number the people again, and he was told not to. Don't need to number the people. Doesn't matter how many people we've got that can fight. If the Lord's with us, we're going to win. But David numbered the people anyway. And it angered the Lord because David numbered the people when he wasn't supposed to. So the take-home lesson again is make sure whatever we do is for the right reason. We can do something that looks like could be good, but it's for the wrong reason. And it could anger the Lord. David angered the Lord. And it caused 3 days pestilence on Israel, and many people lost their lives because of that. Well, Solomon was appointed king. Solomon was given a wish, and he chose an understanding heart to judge the people rather than riches and honor. The Lord liked that so much, he gave Solomon the understanding heart, and then he gave him the riches and honor too. Now here's a good lesson for things that we would pray for. If we want to be highly esteemed in God's sight, pray often for understanding and for wisdom. Now, I know a person that personally, I don't know if she doesn't believe in roadmaps or she doesn't know how to read a roadmap, but will absolutely go down the road trying to find someplace and come to a stop sign and pray to the Lord to tell her whether to go right or to go left. Now, that's all right. But I sort of like to pray for the wisdom to understand people and how to deal with people and how to get along with people and how to say the right thing at the right time and how to come across the right way and how to spark interest in other people of the Lord's Word so that we can all get to heaven, all of us together. And this is sort of what Solomon wanted. He wanted to know how to deal with the people well. You remember the story about the two harlots that were asleep, and one of them's child died, and so they woke up the next morning with one living child, and they both claimed the child. This was one of the first tests just recorded that Solomon had. And what did Solomon say do? You remember this? It's awful. But he says he'll get a sword. He'll get a sword and cut the child in two, give half to one, half to the other. Well, the one whose child it was not, out of jealousy, said, good, go ahead, cut it in two. That way, well, neither one had it. The one whose child it was immediately said, give it to her. Then Solomon knew. He knew it was the one that was willing to give it up. Now, that spread through Israel. And Israel knew, just like when Samuel did good, they knew they had a prophet. They know they've got a king that's got wisdom. And they feared the king. Solomon built the temple of God that David was not allowed to build. David wanted to build it. But the Lord said, you've been a man of too much blood. And if you read the things that went on in David's reign, it's really, it's sort of gruesome how many people were slain. Thousands of people died during the reign of David. The Queen of Sheba, you may have remembered this story out of the Old Testament. She came to see Solomon to witness his greatness and his wealth and his wisdom. And she left saying, the half was not told me. Of all that I was told, I wasn't told half of your wisdom and knowledge and greatness. Solomon grew old and his heart was drawn to idolatry by his wives. Now, we've been talking about how wise Solomon was, but I want to tell you, sometimes I wonder if that wisdom just applied to his public life, because in his private life, Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. And that doesn't sound too smart. The wisdom he had, the Lord must have given it to him, because with all those wives around, he wasn't going to be allowed to do too much thinking. So the Lord was with him in all of his public matters, but his private matters, the idolatry of the wives he married caused them to take his heart away. And he did something that had not been done in the two previous kings, as far as we know. Because in the reign of Saul and in the reign of David, there is not much said about the problem of idolatry. There was wars going on. And in time of war, the people didn't tend to stray too far from Jehovah God because they knew he was the best game in town. So during the time of Saul and David, there's not much problem with it. But in the time of Solomon, the Lord blessed Solomon's reign with peace. And in peacetime, the people's heart was allowed to lose its concentration and to drift. And so Solomon's wives pulled his heart away. The Lord was very angry and said he would take the kingdom from the hand of Solomon's son. Solomon died, and the division began. And that division is what Brad's going to talk about tomorrow night. So this is a story as far as we're going to go tonight. Now we're going to do what we did a couple of nights ago. We're going to go back to points to ponder. Because in here, there's just a few verses that really give us something that we need to take home with us. We're going to talk about three different things. Some things went right in our story. Some things went wrong. And then this is sort of a philosophy. The Lord can buy us books and send us to school, but people have got to do right. And you're all familiar with this expression when you have a child that just does not act like they've ever had any learning, and you say, well, our mom and daddy bought their books for them and sent them to school, but they just couldn't make them learn. Well, the Lord did all these things for Israel, and they still messed up. So, let's look at these things, and they're just kind of jumbled up right here. We're trying to go sort of as the story goes. Things that went wrong. First off, the people asked for a king against Solomon's wishes. 1 Samuel 8, verses 5 through 7. Behold, you are old, the people said to Samuel, and your sons walk not in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. But the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto the Lord, and the Lord said unto Samuel, hearken unto the voice of the people and all that they say unto you. Now this is what I want you to get. This is one of these phrases that needs to stick in your mind. For they have not rejected you, but they rejected me, that I should not reign over them. Right there. They have not rejected you, but they have rejected me. So you and I, when we are thinking about witnessing to somebody, don't need to worry that we're going to get rejected. We may or we may not. But we're not that important. We want to think we are, but we're not that important. We're just a messenger. It's the Lord that they reject. And we need to remember this statement. This is what the Lord said to Samuel. Samuel was kind of poor-mouthing in the situation right here. They don't want me to be the prophet anymore. They don't want to listen to me. Let me give them your word, Lord. And the Lord just kind of calmed him down. Don't you see, Samuel? Don't get excited, Samuel. It's not you they're rejecting. It's me. Remember that phrase. We've got another two or three. God allowed his people to have a king against even God's wishes. 1 Samuel 8:8-9, according to all the works which they have done since the day that I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto you. Now therefore hearken unto their voice. Howbeit, this is what I want you to get, howbeit yet protest solemnly unto them, and show them the matter of the king that shall reign over them. Now, protest solemnly. God didn't want to give them a king, but they were bound and determined to have one. Now, where does this come in? You talk with anybody about marriage and divorce, and one argument they're going to come up with is, well, people get married and divorced, and what God has put together, let not man put asunder, and they're putting it asunder, and they're remarrying, and God's recognizing that. Okay, just because God recognizes something does not mean he approves of it. Now, my best defense against that line of reasoning is this verse right here. God didn't want to give them a king, but they were going to have one. And he said, Samuel, you go ahead and anoint the one I pick. I'll pick him, but you protest solemnly and let them know that it's not my will and it's not your will that they have it. So not everything that goes on that God acknowledges is approved by God. Remember that. That will come up when you begin to get out here and witness to folks. There's some things that went right. God chose the first king of Israel. God found a man that he thought would do the job. He thought he would. 1 Samuel 10, 23 and 24. When he stood up among the people, this is Saul, he was higher than any of the people from his shoulders and upward. Saul was a tall person. And Samuel said to all the people, see you whom the Lord has chosen, that there is none like him among all the people. And all the people shouted and said, God save the king. But then things started going wrong pretty good. God's first chosen king failed to obey. 1 Samuel 15, verses 13 and 14. And Samuel came to Saul. This is when Saul was supposed to have killed everything of the Amalekites, except he didn't kill Agag and the best of the cattle and the flock. And so Samuel came to Saul, and before Samuel gets there, he hears the animals that he was not supposed to be hearing. You know, he's supposed to be coming up to Saul with his army. He's not supposed to be coming up to Saul with his flocks and his herds. Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, I have performed the commandment of the Lord. Now, in case you don't think that the Lord's got a sense of humor, I want you to look at this next statement. And Samuel said, what means then this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? Now, you know Samuel just could have come right out and said, you didn't do it. You saved Agag. You know, he could have accused him in 10 different phrases, but he didn't. He put it to him in a way that Saul would have to think about what he was doing. He said, right here, what means then What does it mean, Saul? I'm hearing these cows. What does this mean? This doesn't just mean that there's cows alive in the camp. What this means is, Saul, that you disobeyed directly what God said to do. Sort of like when Adam and Eve was in the Garden of Eden and they heard the Lord walking and they had already partaken of the forbidden fruit and they were naked and they knew they were naked now. And the Lord came up and said, Adam, where are you? God knew where he was. And he knew why he was out of sight. But he asked him that subtle way, where are you? What means the bleeding of the cow? And then in that same chapter later on at the end, it says the Lord repented that he had made Saul king over Israel. So what started out right went wrong because of the character. God's first chosen king failed to ask God. 1 Samuel 28:7-15. Then Saul said unto his servant, seek me a woman that has a familiar spirit. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice. Well, if she was used to doing this, and she was actually used to bringing people up, why was she excited when she did it? I don't know if this is the right explanation or not. But I really don't think that she was in the habit of conjuring people up from the dead all the time. And Samuel said to Saul, now this is good too, why have you disquieted me to bring me up? Why have you disquieted me, nephew? For you men that are going to be doing some preaching and funerals and things like that, you've got probably a good half a dozen passages that you need to be real familiar with because they come in handy along about funeral time. You need to nail this one down. Samuel said, why are you bothering me, bringing me back? You hear folks talk about, I wish I could bring so-and-so back. Let's put it another way. Let's say, I wish I could go on where they are. Because chances are good, if our loved ones are where we think they are, why would we want to disquiet them to bring them back to this land of sin and sorrow? So think about what you're saying before you wish. God's first chosen king failed. 1 Chronicles 10:13-14. Saul died for his transgression, which he committed against the Lord God, even against the word of the Lord, which he kept not, and also for asking counsel of one that had a familiar spirit to inquire of it. And inquired not of the Lord, therefore he slew him and turned the kingdom unto David, the son of Jesse. He failed to ask God and to trust in God. Do you think you and I are going to do any better? Things that went right. God chose the second king, and he found somebody that was good. 1 Samuel 16:1, the Lord said unto Samuel, how long will you mourn for Saul? This is after Saul was obviously going to be rejected. Seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel, fill your horn with oil and go. I will send you to Jesse, the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. That was David. David was the next king to be picked. Now, what went wrong with this situation? Uzzah, we already talked about him, he tried to do a good deed, but 1 Chronicles 13:9-10, when they came unto the threshing floor of Chidon, Uzzah did a simple thing, put forth his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. You and I might have done the same thing. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and he smote him, because he put his hand to the ark, and there he died before God. And it so upset David that I believe the story goes that they kind of made a detour with the ark for a few months. Got afraid of it. Didn't know if they could handle it. So what went right? What went right was something David left us. He left us the Psalms. And one of the writers, in writing about how great the Psalms were, says that in leaving us the Psalms, David did more for us than he did as a king to build up the kingdom of Israel. In leaving us the Psalms, they're beautiful. Psalms 1:1-2. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and his law does he meditate day and night. You're well familiar with the beauty of this one. 23rd Psalm, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And on and on and on. Now, what's remarkable about this is these Psalms were written by a man who yes, was king, but for a lot of his life was in despair as Saul was trying to kill him and had David on the run for his life. David was sometimes was outside of the promised land in neighboring countries trying to stay alive. And then David had the problems with his family. So when you read the Psalms, you're not just reading about a person who was set up to be a king and everything's going right and he's writing about what a wonderful life he's got. A lot of the times what you're reading in Psalms is a man that's been in tremendous despair and he's writing because God has saved his skin and he knows God saved his skin and it's only by the grace of God that he's still got his skin because he would have been killed time and time over if the Lord hadn't intervened. But what went wrong? God's second chosen king failed self-control 101. Now, if you ever see these expressions with the 101 put after it, that refers to typical freshmen in college, freshman level classes that are the most basic classes that everybody's got to pass, but sometimes those classes are used to weed out the wannabes from the gonna-bes. The people that want to have an education and the people that are going to get one no matter what. So a lot of people fail their 101 series classes. So that's why you'll see this expression, 101. Self-control 101, the most basic thing is David. When you get a chance to look at a naked woman, don't look. If you're up on your housetop and you see one over there bathing and you recognize that's what it is, turn your head. Don't look. Now, how graphic do we need to get about making that a take-home point with all the stuff that's all around us, men? There are women out here that don't deserve a second look. In fact, we cannot give them a second look because of the way they're dressed, because of the way they're acting, because of their body language, their body posture. We cannot give them a second look if we will keep our hearts pure. David failed self-control 101, 2 Samuel 12, 9 and 10. Wherefore have you despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? You have killed Uriah the Hittite with a sword and have taken his wife to be your wife and have slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. The sword will never depart from your house. Amnon, Tamar, Absalom, it didn't depart. David had problems the rest of his life. What else went wrong? The second chosen king failed to abide by the word of the Lord. 1 Chronicles 21, 1 through 8. Satan stood up against Israel and provoked David to number Israel. And God was displeased with his saying. Therefore he smote Israel. And David said unto God, I have sinned greatly. The man after God's own heart did a personal sin. But what went right? Well, God found a third king. Now, one thing that's interesting about this is we spoke the other night about some of the choices that we read in the Bible. Why did God choose Abraham? Why did he choose Isaac? Why did he choose Jacob? Why did certain things happen at certain times? Why? Why did he choose Moses, Aaron, tribal Levi, Israel at all? Why did he choose any of them? Well, here's another choice. All of my sons, David said, all of my sons, for the Lord has given me many sons, he has chosen Solomon, my son, to sit upon the throne of the kingdom of the Lord over Israel. For I have chosen him to be my son, and I will be his father. Moreover, I will establish his kingdom forever, if he be constant to do my commandment and my judgment as at this day. Now remember, that's a condition at the end right there. If he will do good, I will be his king. I will be his God. What did Solomon do right? He left us Proverbs. Now, real quickly, I want to read you something. I'm not going to look at a lot of Proverbs, just one passage. And this is sort of straight to the point, so to speak. But this one passage is going to tell you the nature of the Proverbs and why you should care that Solomon left us Proverbs. At the window of my house, I looked through my casement, his window, and beheld among the simple ones, I discerned among the youths, a young man void of understanding, passing through the street near her corner. And he went the way to her house, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. And behold, there met him a woman with the attire of a harlot, and subtle of heart. She is loud and stubborn. Her feet abide not in her house. Now is she without, now in the streets, and lies in wait at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face said to him, I have peace offerings with me. This day have I paid my vows. Therefore came I forth to meet you diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. Now do you see in this narrative how many things of human nature he just lays right out here? I mean, he just goes right to the juggler, so to speak, and hits us with it. I have decked my bed with coverings of tapestry, with carved works, with fine linen of Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, olives, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until the morning. Let us solace ourselves with loves. Adultery, fornication is what she's talking about, but she's making it sound good. For the good man is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. We won't get caught. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home at the day appointed. With her much fair speech, she caused him to yield. With the flattering of her lips, she forced him. He goes after her straightway as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till a dart strikes through his liver like Absalom hanging in an oak tree by his head. The dart struck him and killed him. As a bird hastens to the snare and knows that it is for his life. His old sister Butte used to say, plain words, but plain words are hard to be misunderstood. And this is what Proverbs is full of. Wisdom, God's wisdom for us to live by. And if we would live by it, we would be so much better off. Okay, what else went right? Solomon left us Ecclesiastes and the Song of Solomon. Now here's three little tidbits out of Ecclesiastes, the preacher. Ecclesiastes 3 verses 1 through 8, just a little bit of this passage. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born and a time to die. Then it goes on to many different things. But this is part of Solomon's legacy that he left us. Ecclesiastes 12 and 1, remember now thy Creator in the days of thy youth, so that you don't spend the rest of your life wishing you hadn't made a bad choice. Ecclesiastes 12 and 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. But things went wrong again. God's third chosen king, Solomon, failed in faith, 1 Kings 11, 4 through 13, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned away his heart after other gods. And the Lord was angry with Solomon, because his heart was turned from the Lord God of Israel. The Lord said unto Solomon, you have not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I commanded you. I will surely rend the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. This is what Brad's going to start talking about tomorrow night. The rending of the kingdom. Notwithstanding in your days, I will not do it for David your father's sake, but I will rend it out of the hand of your son. Howbeit, I will not rend away all the kingdom, but will give one tribe to you for David, my servant's sake, and for Jerusalem's sake, which I have chosen. That was the tribe of Judah. And that came to pass. Notice what happened to Solomon. Solomon did not do what was right. The Lord came to Solomon one time, as soon as he was king, and gave him the wish in which Solomon wished for wisdom and knowledge. All right. The second time the Lord came to Solomon and they had a conversation was when Solomon was dedicating the temple. And at that dedication, I'm not going to take time for the verse for it, but at that dedication the Lord told Solomon all the good things he was going to do, but he strictly laid it out in front of him. If you do wrong, I'll take away everything. And this is what the Lord is speaking of. It's that second conversation at the dedication of the temple. Solomon messed up, and God did what he said he was going to do. God's warning to Solomon came to pass. But if you shall at all turn from following me, you or your children, and will not keep my commandments and my statutes which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then will I cut off Israel out of the land which I have given them, and this house which I have hallowed for my name will I cast out of my sight. And Israel shall be a proverb and a byword among all people. 2 nights ago, we talked about why did God have to bring Israel out of Egypt with a mighty hand. To show Israel, Egypt, and all of the nations how strong Israel was going to be. Now God turns it all around. And he says, if you do wrong, you're going to be a byword. The word Israel, it will be a joke. It will be used in derision because you have so profaned my desire. Okay, one last slide. Time to go. God can buy us books, but we've got things we've got to do. God can pick the man, but the man must still obey. There's always free will. God can lead the man, but the man must still follow. God can preserve in the battle, but the man must still preserve in peace. When Israel was fighting wars, they weren't worried about idolatry. But when it was peacetime, idolatry sprang up. God can love the man, but the man must love God. So here's our lesson. So far we've talked about the conception of God's people, and everything was operating off of a family scale. Then we talked about the beginnings of the nation. We talked about the nation that had leaders that came up that still wasn't good enough. Tonight we talked about another situation, and I'm not going to say and use the word experimenting. I wouldn't want to say that God is monkeying with us and experimenting with us. But man has been allowed to witness how they have operated under the family system, under a strong leader system, under a dynasty system with a king. Didn't work. You know what this is going to lead to? The best of all. The King of Kings, sitting at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus Christ is the best government of a worldwide kingdom. That's what all this is going to. And all this that we're doing is showing human beings that none of these other systems work. So tonight we've dismissed the king and dynasty method. It didn't work, and it won't work. So we're still building and going through this story to get to the Messiah, to the time of Christ. I hope it's been interesting, all the stories you've heard before, but I hope this put to a few of you that maybe had all these pieces out here to bring them together. It's going to be real important next 2 nights to put these things together, because I would love for you this week to leave these meetings with an appreciation for, of course, the first half, but what we're going to start tomorrow night, the second half of the Old Testament, because it's beautiful. And it shows God's providence just as much as the first half has, just as much. If anyone would desire the prayers of the church or obedience for the prayers of the church, let us help while we stand in faith. 89.